Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast. One of the hosts thinks leak is what you do to the curb. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am so happy today to be joined by a first-time guest. I did a survey recently of my listeners, which, by the way, was wonderful. I read all of your replies. Some of them like made me tear up a little bit. They're so nice and a good reminder of the fact that most people are nice and aren't leaving angry comments. They're just listening. So I appreciated that. But I bring it up to thank you guys for filling it out. And also to note that several people remarked that they would like to have this person on the podcast. I actually invited you on the podcast before I got the survey, but the survey affirmed that I made the right decision because today we are joined by the one and only Theo Ash. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that the survey and you both wanted me. That sounds like a lot of people. So I feel good. I'm sure you feel good that the survey reaffirmed your priors. That's always fun. And I guess we'll talk about priors being reaffirmed today in a couple of different ways.
Kind of. Well, yeah, no, what if I got a bunch of comments that said, don't ever have Theo Ash on, then we'd be in a tough spot right now.
Then you would live in Miami, Florida.
I think you might have more Dolphins fan enemies than, definitely more than I do, because I've been pretty positive on the offseason. We'll get to that. Theo Ash is one of the hosts of a podcast called Stay Hot. You are also on Twitter at Theo Ash NFL, right? That's your handle?
Yep.
And also, I'm going to say it, probably the only good NFL TikToker.
Thank you. I don't want to come off as too egotistical, but I agree with that assessment. You don't have to, if you have TikTok downloaded and you aren't following me and are following other NFL TikTokers, like, I'm sure they're great and I'm sure your feed is fine, but I think it could be improved by adding me. But
it's a small world. It's a small pool.
It's a small group of people, unfortunately.
I'll say that.
But what can you do?
Well, you do great breakdowns. I really enjoyed this offseason. You went through, I don't think all the quarterbacks, but a lot of the quarterbacks had looked at their interceptions. I really enjoyed that series. I think that's an exercise that's really worth doing. We should all be doing it, frankly, because we so casually threw out, he had 15 picks. He had no picks. And you really got to watch the tape. You did record predictions. So you guys, if you are on TikTok, go check out Theo's work there. Check out his podcast. Check out his Twitter. Today, we are not here to talk about TikTok or Twitter or, we are here to talk about a little bit about priors. We're basically wrapping up the preseason, and I sent you a list of things that I wanted to talk about as we consider the 2023 preseason ahead of the regular season, talk about some expectations in that regard, some performers. And then at the end of the podcast, and this is where the Dolphins will come in, I asked you for a list of teams you felt like you were higher on and lower on than the consensus. And I really liked your picks because I found them to be really interesting. So we will get to that tease. But the first thing I want to talk to you about was about the rookies. And this is, to me, the most interesting part by far, the preseason, because how much can you really learn about watching, you know, Aaron Rodgers on a single drive throwing to, you know, Garrett Wilson? They're great.
Yeah.
Okay, spoiler. You don't really learn a lot about scheme from watching the preseason, but you do learn a little bit about young players transitioning to the NFL or guys who are fighting for jobs, like Geno last year being a really good example. And I thought the top three rookies, Will Levis barely played. He didn't play the second two games. He was out with an injury. But Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson all had really interesting preseasons. They all played a lot of football, which was useful. They are all starting week one as of today, or I think yesterday. The Houston Texans ended their charade and announced that CJ Stroud is in fact QB1. I have an overarching thought on all three of the quarterbacks, and then I want you and I to kind of dig into what we saw and how we feel about them and how we feel about their situations, perhaps more importantly, which is maybe the thing that I felt a little bit most mixed about coming out of the preseason. Here's my overarching thought. Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson. They all kind of look like they did in college. That's how I felt watching them. I was like, oh yeah, that's how Bryce Young looked at Alabama. That's the anticipation. There's CJ Stroud. There's the accuracy, some issues of pressure. There's Anthony Richardson, the ups, the downs. None of them to me, Theo, looked different from how I regarded them around the draft time, which I liked them all as prospects. So it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, funny how that works. They're the same. The players looked like the players. You know, I think that that's important, though. Like, sometimes, especially with Stroud coming from Ohio State, like, the situation can be so, so different. And we saw it from Fields. Like, he completely changed. So everyone looked like themselves. No one looked like they couldn't handle it at all. So, I thought that those... I agree. Like, everyone, I think, nailed it on the scouting reports. Anthony Richardson didn't get sacked. I mean, we'll go through them one by one. But, yeah, the strengths were the strengths. The weaknesses were the weaknesses.
We'll go through them. But yeah. I think if you're a fan of these teams, you feel good about... Because they're all taken high, obviously, 1, 2, 4. And you don't... All three of these teams, and again, we're about to dig into them, if I was a fan of the Panthers, the Texans, or the Colts, I would not be like,
yeah,
you know, like I'd be like, all right, yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, you know, like I get why we took him. I see the vision. If I was a Panthers fan, however, I would feel nervous about the surroundings. So let's start there with Bryce
Young.
Let's
start there.
Because I actually, that was my bigger takeaway watching the Panthers preseason, less that I changed my opinion about Bryce Young at all. In fact, I didn't literally look the same to me that he did in college, the way he throws, the way he moves, all of it. But when he was drafted by Carolina, and I think during this sort of offseason, before we saw the preseason, I was like, well, it's a good situation. That offensive line was ascendant. What a coaching, whatever. I was a little worried about the skill players, but I think that's my biggest concern coming out of the preseason, maybe more than, frankly, the other two teams even, although I do have questions about their casts as well. The Panthers' offensive line just looked really, really bad this preseason in a really alarming way.
Yeah, especially Ike Ekwonu, the top pick last year. And I can take some solace in the fact that he looked pretty rough last preseason and got better and better as the season went on. It would have been nice if he picked up where he left off at the end of last year and kept that momentum going instead of kind of starting all over, which is kind of what it seems like is happening right now. So I think because there is so much continuity on that line and they were decent last year, like you said, I still am holding out hope that once the games start to count and maybe we get deeper into the season, they'll start to gel like they did last season. But yeah, it certainly wasn't an encouraging performance. And then the receivers as well, I wasn't super impressed by any of their work either. I was almost even more concerned about the receiver group than the line after watching them, because I think they're gonna ask a lot of Bryce Young year one, more than Stroud and more than Richardson. And I know that we can't take too much away scheme-wise from these preseason games, but truly we had no idea what this Frank Reich and this Carolina offense would look like this season, because, you know, it's a new team. They brought in an offensive coordinator who's never been an offensive coordinator before. They talked about how they build this thing up from zero. It was a whole new playbook. And the offensive coordinator, Thomas Brown, was the main one who did it with input from Reich and the other coaches. So what is he like? Like, what is his style? I didn't think that we knew anything about it. And after watching these preseason games with Bryce Young, I think that, you know, it puts a lot on Bryce Young. I think they do a little bit of everything. And in 2021, yeah. Thomas Brown came over from the Rams. And in 2021, they were able to win the Super Bowl with a very deep dropping passing game, 11 personnel, get everything protected, work something front side with Cup, work something backside with an X receiver. And it was full field reads and it was spread out and it was high flying. And I think it's something like that in Carolina this year. I really do. I think that you've got the other thing that they did was, you know, have last year they had to kind of change it up because Stafford was hurt. They had to find offense somehow. They took a wide receiver, put him at that fullback position. They found so much success with Cup, who is a really good blocker for that slot role. Enter Jonathan Mingo. Like, I think the 2021 Rams is like maybe the closest thing to what we're going to get with these Panthers behind that offensive line. This last preseason game, we saw a lot of four or five step dropbacks, no play action out of gun from Bryce Young. There were concepts happening deep down the field on both sides, and with 11 personnel almost all the time. I think that it could be kind of a high-flying approach, and they traded up top. They traded a top 20 receiver, top 15 receiver, and DJ Moore to get him. Like, they really must believe in this guy, I think more so than the other two. And I think that that is one thing that has stood out to me from these preseason games, is I think they're going to put a lot on his plate. And I don't know. I think that he can handle it because he's a really...
How it'll go.
I think that I think he can handle it. I think that he can be the point guard. I think that he can make things happen. But the receivers are slow. It's not super explosive. You saw some of the problems the Chargers have run into with a similar type of issue. Like Thielen, to me, looks slow and in and out of breaks. He's not really adjusting to the ball with the fluidity that he used to. You know, Mingo tested really well, but I don't think he's some sort of super athlete. You know, they've got Chark, they've got some deep threats, but no one who can really
a little bit too. Mingo at least has had a couple of moments. Well, we should acknowledge that DJ Chark has been hurt, Terrace Marshall has been hurt. Yep. So what we're seeing is not the full complement of receivers. But you made a really interesting point there about the offense. Again, you never know how much to take away from the preseason. But I think we'll get to the other two offenses. The other two offenses have really looked like what I expected from knowing the coaches. We'll talk about, you know, Houston and Indianapolis. I think it's like, oh, yeah, that's what I thought we would see. Like, oh, yeah, under center, boot, RPOs, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
With the Carolina Panthers, you make a really good point. It was a little bit more of a mystery with the coaching staff and not really understanding the division of labor. And with the Rams and Thomas Brown, you know, that is a system that, again, as you alluded to, dramatically shifted when Matt Stafford became the quarterback. And I think where I really agree with you is like the watching Carolina, the offense hasn't been like heavily schemed up for Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. Like they do clearly trust him to go out there, set protections, sit back and point guard this thing. And I see why, because he is very accurate. He throws with, and these are things that I think have manifested themselves during the preseason. He throws with anticipation. Mm-hmm. There has been quite a few moments in this preseason where he has thrown the ball with just such great anticipation. And unfortunately, his receivers have not really lived up to, I think, where the rookie quarterback, one example where it did was when they finally, I think in the third game, things did look a little bit better, probably because of the lack of pressure and the offensive line was able to hold up a little bit more and he wasn't constantly under siege, although Ihuquanu did his best to ruin a couple of drives. But the touchdown to Thielen, it was like a corner route.
Oh, it's beautiful.
But you remember the touchdown? I was like, that is a beautiful ball. That is Bryce Young in college, getting like just throwing it, you know, at the perfect moment. And Thielen, to his credit, you know, got open, made a good catch. He also, I want to mention, I don't know if it was Zitt's drive or the prior drive, but they were playing Detroit. James Houston peeled off. He booted out. James Houston peeled off, and Bryce Young showed really tremendous stop start and just juked him. And I was like, okay, Bryce, like, that was impressive. I like that. I like to see that. So I Young is flashing all the stuff that I liked about him in college. I'm just worried about, I think we share concerns about the pieces around him.
I think there's going to be a lot. I think they're going to ask a lot of everybody on that offense, because not only is I think there's going to be the deep drop backs, and I don't think they're going to really hold his hand, but there's also going to be all the RPOs. There's also going to be, I think, a pretty diverse run game. I think they're going to try a little bit of everything. I don't want to run Bryce too often, but I assume they'll maybe run some zone read just to keep defenses honest. And, you know, I think that there's just a little bit of everything in this offense. It's a total hodgepodge from a lot of different places. They've kind of built this all-star coaching staff. Like, who knows what Josh McCown wants to do, the QB coach. He's played under every single head coach that's ever coached. And their offensive coordinator went to 7 colleges in 9 years as a coach. It was year after year, different place, different place, different place, different place. Then he went to LA. They had Goff, Stafford, and then another hodgepodge of quarterbacks that they had to scheme up. So it's like, he has been in a bunch of different places, running a bunch of different offenses. McCown is part of that coaching staff. He's done whatever. Like, I think they're just I would really love to know if you ask the Carolina Panthers, like, what are you at your core? Like, what do you want to run and what do you want to be good at? Mm. Like, I really wonder what they'd say. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. I think I know what the Texans would say. And I think I know what the Colts would say, as you mentioned. And I think that's a lot to ask in a first year of any offense. And I think it's going to be a little bit discombobulated and messy sometimes. But I thought that Young looked pretty good. I thought that he reminded me a little bit of a kind of a nerfed Aaron Rodgers. And I think you see a lot of Kyler and Russ comps for him. But I think that more than those short quarterbacks, Young wants to distribute from the pocket more than they do, I think. I think that the other two want to go etch-a-sketch mode a little bit and like shake things up and change the picture. Like, that's what they want to do more than what Bryce Young wants to do. Bryce Young still wants to do those things, but it's not quite as often. But that's what Rodgers was like too. He wasn't really a running quarterback or someone that you really thought was gonna, you know, just run in the background until someone got open. He wanted to distribute from the pocket, but when he was in his athletic prime, he was really fleet of foot and he could make things happen late in the down and he could make guys miss in the pocket. And I think Young can do all those things as well. He's got the lightning quick release. He can throw from a variety of different arm angles. I think one thing that did stand out to me in this preseason is terms of flaws for Young. He doesn't have the arm that Aaron Rodgers has. And I think that stood out a couple times to me over the course of this preseason. There was a whole shot against the Lions up the left sideline. Thielen, you know, he was in that zone versus, I think it was cover two. Yeah. This was from the broadcast angle. And, you know.
No, I remember the exact throw you're talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The overthrow. Yeah.
Wobbled a little bit, maybe a little bit too much arc on it, floated. You think about a guy like, you know, one of these elite pocket passers, the Herberts of the world, even the Burrows, like they're just kind of taller and maybe, I don't know if Burrow has a more powerful arm, but Herbert definitely does, who could just like zip it right in there. Young couldn't quite do that. There was another high low on the right sideline where he was targeting Mingo, running a deep out route. I think it was Hurst underneath. And Mingo didn't have much separation, but he did have body positioning if you put it right on the sideline. And Young like tried to really, had a strong base. He really had room to step into the throw and he tried to fire it in there and the ball was kind of wobbly and skipped in front of Mingo for a little bit. Like, I just don't see that like, woomph, that power arm that some of these guys have and that Rodgers has on top of everything else. So I don't think he quite has the ceiling of Rodgers, but I think a lot of the things that like the style and like just watching him, he's like a shrunken, weird version of
him. He's a playmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a playmaker who also wants to win in the pocket, to very, very, you know, TLDR what you just said.
Yeah.
I think that tension is going to be interesting to see as it plays out this year, because we saw that in college at Alabama, especially his last year when, I mean, one of the things that Bryce Young, I think, thank God, he has going into the season based on what we've seen, is experience playing behind a bad offensive line. If you put CJ Stroud behind this Panthers offensive line, I would be like, good night. So we'll get to him. So that was in college. We knew he didn't have an elite arm. He throws with accuracy and anticipation, but that, you know, like that whole shot, he's not going to hit it every time. I think for him, it's just going to be a matter. And if he had a real number one, like a DeAndre Hopkins type, who was a guy I wanted them, frankly, to sign on the outside, I would care less. I'd be like, it's fine. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be some ups and downs because of the lack of surrounding talent. But like what I've seen, looks like he did in college. He does not look like it's too big for him. I feel good about him. Stroud, I have felt progressively better about as the preseason has gone on, especially obviously that week one start. It was a lot of backups on the Texans offensive line. They were playing, granted, New England's twos, but New England's twos are still like monsters, and they were just throwing a bunch of at him. And he looked pretty rattled. And, you know, that was a concern I had coming out of college, which was really the biggest concern I had about CJ Stroud, is like, how does he react to pressure? He just wasn't an elite quarterback under pressure. He was really good at everything else. Fortunately, as the preseason has gone on, as he's been in situations where he's had time, again, I feel like a little bit of a broken record, but he has flashed the traits that I loved about him, which is he can spin it. I mean, of these guys, he throws with such beautiful touch. So, I mean, some of the balls he's thrown this preseason, I would put up there with, you know, the top guys in the NFL. not even like, they're not even like deep balls. They're just, most of them have been like intermediate stuff or stuff on the move. But he's, even in the last game, I forgot who the Texans were playing. Oh, the Saints.
It was the Saints.
So it was yesterday. We're taping about it. Yeah. So the ball he threw to the to Schultz, the tight end, that was such a CJ Stroud ball where it was, I think it was like an in or something, but he's so good at throwing away from lever. Like, he's so good at pinpointing the exact spot, whether it's protecting a receiver or setting him out for yards after the catch. It has looked really good. I think for him and for this offense, which we kind of know what it's going to look like, the question is just going to be, to me, like, okay, well, the pressure stuff we saw, how is that translating to the regular season? How does this offensive line play? Will he be protected enough to deliver? Because if he is kept clean, Theo, I think he can be an extreme, like, I think he can be extremely similar to the guy we saw at Ohio State.
Yeah. I mean, my takeaway from watching him at Ohio State was he's perfect. Like, literally nothing. It was awesome. Every throw that was deep down the field, it was aggressive. It was down the field. It was, the placement was always perfect. His ability to create, I think, was always pretty good. I think the Georgia game made everybody say, like, whoa, this guy can really, you know, make something happen with his legs. I think that was always...
He don't want to run it.
I think
and
that was...
You're seeing that in the... He does not want to.
No, he doesn't really want to run it, but his accuracy on the move, I think, was always pretty good. You could go back to week one last year versus Notre Dame. He would roll out when he had to, and he could make throws, like, on comeback routes, like, lofted towards the sideline. No one else can make a play on it except for his receiver. Like, that was happening week one last year, and then he was never under pressure again until Georgia, and then you saw it a little bit again where he could scramble out and make throws on the move. But like you said, that's the question with him, is like, everything was great at Ohio State, but of course everything was great. Everyone on their offensive line, like DeJuan Jones was really good, Paris Johnson was really good, their left guard, I forget his name, but he had a couple reps even versus Jalen Carter that I thought were just fantastic. Their center was a high draft pick. I don't know about the right guard, but he was probably good too. And then all the receivers are awesome. So it's like, yeah, he performed perfectly, but it's just a very, very, very different feel. And when you look at the top quarterbacks in the league, the Justin Herberts of the world, the Lamar Jacksons, the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, they didn't really go to any powerhouse college where, like, they had to adjust to, well, they all have to adjust to NFL speed, but some of these guys at the powerhouses, they really, it's really a hard adjustment. And even Burrow, who played in a stacked offense, like, it took him a while to stop taking like 70 sacks a year. To like, he was special enough to get it done in both places. But Lenny cameo, that's exciting for me.
I got that means I got a delivery.
That's awesome.
Maybe he's defending Justin Herbert's honor. Anyways, CJ Stroud,
but
Ohio State stacked offense.
Yeah.
Now he gets to play with Nico Collins.
And I think it's going to look very different to Carolina, in that I don't think that the Texans are going to put everything on CJ Stroud's plate. I think instead of CJ Stroud's supporting cast, I think of this offense as Damian Pierce's supporting cast, honestly. Like, they're under center so much over these past 2 weeks. They've been getting him the ball in a variety of different ways in a different scheme. Like, they've been tossing him the ball. They've been trying to get him out to the perimeter. He's been the starter almost every single snap while Stroud has been out there. It doesn't look like a mix between him and Singletary at all. D'Amico Ryan said, if we're going to have a good offense, it's because Damian Pierce is good. And I believe him, based on the personnel and based on the formations they've lined up in, and just based on the way Damian Pierce played last year and how many tackles he broke and how much of a beast I think he can be. It's a very different scheme, because I think this is going to be more of that one cut wide zone stuff that they're bringing over from San Francisco. Whereas last year it was more power based.
And it's,
gap.
I want to interrupt you. Yeah. Yes. It's 2021 pre San Francisco, which was something I didn't know. I wanted to see it. I had DJ Bienemy, who covers the Texans, on the AFC South. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this. I was like, so what does it look like? Is he under center? Are they running wide zone? Or are we seeing more of the power stuff San Francisco ran last year, the option routes, whatever? No, this is when we think Shanahan offense, even though that's not what it is now, that's what this is going to look like. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good fit for Stroud, Theo, like, because he looks comfortable under center. He looks really good throwing on the move. Like you said, You're not putting too much on his plate. I think it makes sense.
And you're not putting too much on the wide receivers. Yes, you're not putting too much on the receivers' plate as well. Because that's also a big part of it. Yeah.
It's contrast.
No, that's all I want to say. It's not that they don't believe in Stroud. The entire passing offense is like
No. It's a contrast to what we talked about with Carolina. You know, where I was like, this isn't really heavily schemed up. It feels like they're asking these guys to win and whatever. This is going to be really schemed up. I think when we see more Robert Woods being integrated into the offense, that'll become abundantly clear. Like, they want to scheme up gimmies. They want, I think, all of the basic play action concepts we've seen in San Francisco for a while that when we talk about Kyle Shanahan and how he made it like bumper bowling for the quarterbacks. I think we're going to see a lot of that stuff, a lot of the really basic stuff. And I think it's right. I honestly, and then, you know, every now and then Stroud will have a chance to like flash the arm talent. Oh, yeah. And I think like the play action passing attack will look really good because he can make every throw. And I don't know. I felt pretty good about the state of the Texans at the end of this. Like, I was like, all right, you know, because look, none of these groups are world beaters, and we'll wrap with Indianapolis. But when I was like, you know, when I think about Collins, Woods, Tank Dell, we'll see how they use him. Schultz, tight end group's not bad. Very good running back room. In the context of a Kyle Shanahan offense, which is what this is going to be, it's a good situation for a young quarterback. Like I felt better about his situation at the end of the preseason than I did at the beginning.
Yeah, and the offensive line as well. Laremy Tunsil is maybe the best left tackle in the league. They just paid Titus Howard. They just brought in Juice Scruggs, a second round pick. And I think that pick told you a lot about how they wanted to play, because he's an undersized but very athletic, like mobile, fluid center. They drafted Kenyon Green last year, who was severely disappointing in the scheme last year. And really, you look at their running numbers, like, I felt like I watched Pierce last year, and he was just doing crazy things every play. Like, oh, he's awesome. He's breaking all these tackles. And then you look at the success rate, he's, like, down at the bottom of every single one. So it's like, to me, with the investments they made in the offensive line and the running back they have, the running game should have been better. So I think a change of scheme is warranted. I think that there is nowhere to go but up in terms of their running game. And I think that, yeah, it's going to be kind of a weird – I think it's going to be almost a little reminiscent of like the Titans with Derrick Henry. You've got this big, powerful back running a lot of zone runs with a quarterback who can move a little bit, but mostly is dotting you up after play action. I think that's what it's going to look like, mixed with the baby 49ers defense. It's kind of an interesting team build.
It really is the baby 49ers defense. I think, that was another thing. I was watching them against, it wasn't the Saints starters, but I was like, damn, Texans are kind of tackling. I was like, is this D'Amico Ryan's effect already setting in? We went over the defense in the division preview, but I like some of these players.
Yeah. I thought their linebackers I don't remember the specifics, but like their linebackers were making like good instinctive plays. And I'm like, that was not happening whatsoever last year. Their linebacker group was a joke. So yeah, like I think it has to be the D'Amico Ryan's effect. And I remember last year when Lovie Smith called Derek Stingley, he said, how would you like to follow the number one receiver every time? And everyone was like, does this mean he's changing? And he didn't change. I think D'Amico, the thing that stands out to me about him is how, like, yes, he got a bunch of studs in San Francisco, but they were all used perfectly. Like, everyone was maximized and everything was perfect. So it's like, maximize Derek Stingley, maximize Christian Harris, like, whatever their skill sets are, don't do what was happening last year. And I think that really last year with Pep Hamilton and Lovie Smith, like, I don't think the offense was being maximized. I don't think the defense was being maximized. This year, I think that the scheme plays a little bit more to everybody's strengths. So will it be a really good team? I think Stroud could maybe put up the best efficiency numbers if this is indeed the direction they go, because typically, like, if they spam play action, he might be more efficient than Bryce Young, who might have a little bit more on his plate. I think that Stroud is set up well for a more efficient season, or an easier season than Bryce Young is. Even with the gap.
I think it's one of those things where
in like wide receiver talent, because it looks on paper like Carolina has more proven guys than the Texans. But I think like,
yeah,
I'm not totally sure if that's how it's going to go down.
We'll see when DJ Chark comes
back. To say, yeah, I'm not willing to say that for sure.
So Anthony Richardson's final guy. I think the last game he started, I think he did 3 or 4 drives against Philadelphia, was like the true Anthony Richardson experience. And I think a pretty strong preview, both skill set and schematically, of what we will get from him this year, starting off with some missed throws, some inaccuracies on the short stuff. Then I think it was, I don't know if it was the second or the third drive, but you saw, okay, this is what it's going to look like. It's play action, it's RPOs. It's very similar to, there's a lot of similarities to what Shane Steichen ran in Philadelphia. I was kind of joking with my colleagues about Jalen Hurts, watching him on the sidelines, like, what the fuck, man, I thought this was our thing, like, you know. And then you also saw, and by the way, again, some inaccurate throws, some incredible throws, one of which was dropped, but fastballs. I mean, the deep throws fastballs.
Yeah, he does.
And then you also saw, I think two things that are very important about Anthony Richardson. One, he's impossible to sack. We all knew this. Everyone who watched him in college knew this. This was honestly like
glaring.
Our like draft Twitter would not shut up about this, and it translates. He is impossible to sack. You saw that on multiple plays. The dude, it's kind of like, what if Big Ben was fast? You know what I mean? Like, you remember how Big Ben used to, like,
yes,
guys couldn't bring him down, you know? It's similar to that. And then you also saw, and this is really key, the impact that he has on the run game, even when you aren't designing runs for him. I think it was maybe this was the third drive. It wasn't even the score, but simple zone read. The linebacker, and again, there's a backups, whatever, looked just like, I mean, he was frozen by the presence of Anthony Richardson threatening the keep. And I think we're going to see that. I think the RPO will also help the run game. And you saw that a little bit. It really is. He called the Texans the baby Niners defense. This is the baby Eagles offense. And I think there's going to be highs. I think there's going to be lows. But it's going to be really fun to watch.
I think so, too. I really love watching Richardson. He's just one of my favorite watches, good or bad. It's always exciting. And the RPO stuff, you've got to be robotic. You've got to hit, there's no room for extra creation stuff. And I thought when they called those, like, he's able to, you know, get that done, get the ball out quickly, like, execute those to a pretty high level. Like, I think that he can do all that. But I don't think you can ever make Anthony Richardson a robot. And for better or worse, like, you saw some of that in this game. He goes a little bit rogue, perhaps. There are times where I think he wants to manipulate, he wants to move around in the pocket, maybe manipulate leverage. There was a time that Michael Pittman just burned someone on the double move, just absolutely toasted him. And he was looking at him, but moved off of it a little bit quick, even as the corner was breaking on the outside part of this double move. But what he wanted to do was kind of step up, influence the linebackers because he's always such a threat to run, and then throw across his body. And he was able to hit Kyle Granson low, but it's like he should have just stuck with the original read. Instead, he's like moving around, trying to manipulate things and get the ball out. But it's like, you missed a touchdown in structure. There was another play. Josh Downs ran a quick little slant. He was on a linebacker. He won instantly. And it wasn't very far down the field. And Richardson separated his hands to throw this ball. Downs is wide open, and then he stops. He doesn't throw it. And what he does is he notices that the defensive linemen have kind of collapsed inside. And even though he's got an open read, he scrambles to his left. And then the linebacker pursues him, and then he throws it to Downs. And it's like what he's trying to do there is like get Downs more open. Like he's trying to get that linebacker completely out of there, and then he's going to throw it to Downs across his body. But it's like, just throw it when it's there, because Downs wasn't ready for this move, and then it bounced off of his helmet and it was incomplete. And it's like that, I kind of like that about him in some way. Like, he's aggressive, you know, he's not someone who is bound to the rules of the offense all the time, which is the case with a lot of the top quarterbacks in the league. So I like that he shows these things. He is absolutely not, you know, he has feel, he wants to do creative stuff and he can make things happen late in the down with his athleticism if he has that creativity. But at the start, like, it's not always the best thing to do, and you got to know when to choose your spots. And I think that's one thing that Richardson, that you can critique Richardson on. He's missed high a couple times. Like, overthrowing Pittman is tough to do, but he's done it. And yeah, he throws fastballs, like, yeah, you said, and nothing has touch. It's just I've talked about how with Young, when he throws with power, there's not that like woof type of feeling where it's just like, whoa, that was a rocket.
Yeah,
that's not the case with Richardson. It's moving pretty fast.
The ball that Downs, it went through his hands, had to have been going like, that was like a Josh Allen level. I mean, his arm strength is insane. And
if Downs would have caught it, he would have scored a touchdown just with the, he would have just been carried by the ball like a cartoon
would have, like,
character.
Carried backwards.
Anyway,
I will say, I do think he lacks touch on some of the short stuff, but the RPOs have looked pretty good. The decision making on the RPOs has mostly been good. You know, I think what I like about watching him, other than the fact that I just think the offense is right for him. It, again, we all knew this. Like, when Shane Steichen became the head coach and they drafted him, we're like, oh, good. You know, like, this is good. We like this.
Yes.
This is the right pairing of coach and quarterback. I think that's been borne out in the preseason. But Theo, I like that he's like playing free, frankly. Mm-hmm. He doesn't appear to be over. I mean, you know, sometimes he's got to speed up his clock a little bit, you know, as you alluded to, but, and I would actually say this about all of the quarterbacks. I think that they all are playing with like a level of confidence, that is encouraging, because it hasn't always been the case with some of the quarterbacks drafted in recent years. So I'll wrap this one more thing, one thought about the Colts before we move on. I don't love the skill players. I mean, what has Alec Pierce even caught a ball from him? He had that one egregious drop week one. That was a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, see, some of this Pittman stuff has not been Pittman's fault, but I just like, I'm like, who's making a play, you know, on this team? And I feel that way across the board, really, as we, again, take a step back. I'm like, do any of these guys have like a true number one?
Yeah, I wish that Pierce had a better preseason. There were some poor moments, but it hasn't been on a large sample size, so I'm hoping that Pierce can flash or take a step in the regular season, like, ahead of where he was last year, because he wasn't horrible last year. It's a better group of receivers to me than, or skill position players, than what Stroud or Young has for me.
You think?
If Jonathan Taylor comes back, I don't know either, but at least with Pittman, he's big and like he could snag maybe some inaccurate. I think it's like built well for Richardson. It's, but Downs maybe isn't. I don't know. It's pretty mid though. They're all pretty mid, but
they're all. I wouldn't even characterize any of those groups as mid, man. I think they're all bottom 10 in the NFL. Like, when you look at, which is, you know, I think something that's going to be really important to remember as we talk about these rookie quarterbacks and their seasons. I don't think any of them are being thrust into, you know, incredible situations. However, I am optimistic based on what we've seen about the actual quarterbacks themselves. Cannot say the same about one Trey Lance, who I am not going to rehash the San Francisco side of things. It's been, now we've got quite some distance from the actual trade, sent to Dallas for a fourth. That's what I want to talk about with you before we take a break here. I want to talk about the actual trade and the Dallas side of things. And we can hit the San Francisco side of things, less about, obviously it was a mistake. They screwed up. It's bad. You know, no amount of success compensates for that. But I want to talk about the situation now that both of these teams are in, if that makes sense, or like why they might have did it and whether we think it was a good idea. The more I think about this, the less sense it makes to me. That's where I'm at with it. Like, when Dallas first did the trade, when the news came out, we were all putting on Trey Lance on teams where there was actually like a path for him, like Minnesota or
the Tampa.
I don't
Tampa
know, whatever.
Was the
but,
one I saw.
So Dallas seemed Tampa. Atlanta.
Yep.
It was a name that I think some, you know. But so Dallas comes across and we're like, the what? And you know, the first thought is, you know, it's a fourth, whatever. You can say that. But I don't know what the upside play is for, like, the case for it being like a, let's just see what we got, get him in the building. He's not going to play football. So, you know, the whole thing with Lance is that he's been impossible to evaluate because he's barely played. He's not going to play in Dallas. And frankly, I'll throw this out. Like, I don't know if, let's say Dak Prescott does get hurt. And I don't, this, I'm throwing out any leverage against Dak Prescott. That's stupid. But let's say Dak Prescott gets hurt. Are we sure they start Trey Lance over Cooper Rush? Because I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure either. And the only thing I can think of is they had like a top five grade on Lance, or thought he was like the best or the second best quarterback in the class with Lawrence, and just were like, he's still, you know, we still don't know what he is. So like a fourth rounder, like that's all I can think of is like, they just really, really liked him before the draft. They heard they could get him for a fourth round pick and were like, we'll just bring him in the building and then we'll figure it out later. Like, what could the logic be beyond just that? Like, I don't know, because you're right. He's not going to play behind Dak. He may not even play behind Rush, who had a good record when he played last year. I don't think, maybe McCarthy wants to use Dak more like Cam Newton. I don't know. This is a scheme fit. Like, maybe that's what no Kellen Moore looks like, but that's almost certainly not true.
I think someone said that. I think maybe it was McCarthy or Jones. Someone was like, well, you know, as a backup, he could do more stuff what Dak does. I'm like, what?
Right.
Dak Prescott, Dakota Rain, who barely runs? Like, what are we? This is not like you're bringing in him to Philadelphia where it's like, oh, yeah, we got a guy who can run and we can run some of our QB power. What? No. He can't run the Dak Prescott offense.
Right.
There's nothing. They're not similar quarterbacks at all.
Yeah, I mean, Dak is no motion, line up and just run something and be a really aggressive down the field. It's as much of a pocket. He's as much of a pocket passer as there is in the league. And right. Lance just has, his whole thing is like the athletic upside. And I thought Lance at NDSU like was a decent guy in structure. And I thought what they were running at NDSU was actually a little Shanahan-y. And that's what kind of why like you could see like, oh, there's Juszczyk and oh, there's, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering, but it wasn't like Dallas and it wasn't what McCarthy ran with Rodgers. If like, it's going to look more like West Coasty and the ball is out super fast. And,
yes.
Like Jerry Jones said they would have drafted Hurts if he had fallen to them a couple drafts ago. And he said that Lance reminds him of Hurts. It's like, what would you guys have done with Jalen Hurts? That just sounds to me like they were like, we liked him. By the way, that quarterback who's second in MVP was like, we were going to draft him, by the way. But I don't know. I have no idea what they're doing. I think they must have just loved him pre-draft. And maybe if they were drafting in the top five that year, maybe their offense would look very different now. But as far as it is now, like I don't really see much of a path to playing time for him or to show anything.
I mean, I'm not mad at it because whatever. You know, he's not making much money. It's a fourth rounder. Although, you know, not this year, but the following year, he'll be pretty highly paid for a backup.
You'd think so.
But I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And I just think I'm just kind of like personally as a football fan, a little bummed because I would have liked to see a team like Minnesota or Atlanta take a flyer, a team where it's like, okay, I'm not saying he's going to work out or, you know, that, but at least there's a path towards something interesting or at least a path towards him playing or like a chance. I don't really get the point of this. It just doesn't make, I mean, you know, and like, look, maybe they got him with the intention of flipping him next offseason, which I think is totally plausible and probably could flip him for something not that much less, I guess. But why again? It just feels like shuffling the deck. The San Francisco side of things, I do want to talk about briefly because I don't like this either. I get, you know, the player wants out and it was a kind of getting kind of ugly and you're getting asked about him all the time. And so there's that side. There's the human side of running a football team that probably we don't acknowledge enough. But I also kind of think they're playing with fire a little bit with their QB depth. Obviously, Brock Purdy is the unquestioned starter. He's QB1. He's been QB1 this entire time. But, you know, he's coming off a very serious injury. Darnold, we know, has been inconsistent his entire NFL career. And then, like, I've seen people say, well, Brandon Allen, this is their QB3. He's not good, y'all. So someone who called the Rams preseason. So I kind of feel like, why would you sacrifice high upside depth for a fourth rounder when you have a Super Bowl roster? I don't know. Do you think is that unfair of me?
I don't think it's unfair, but I do think Kyle Shanahan probably just wanted Lance off the roster and wanted to stop talking about him once and for all. And I think that Trey probably was like, trade me. And Lance was, or not Lance, Trey, well, Trey did say trade me. And then Shanahan was probably like, yeah, trade him. Like, I think it's as simple as that. Like, he's on the roster. He's kind of he's not a massive distraction to the team, I don't think. I don't think the team cares. But I think that he's in a massive, like, annoyance for the 49ers if he's just constantly there and they're constantly like, you failed him and look at him. There he is on the bench. Look, it's sad. They're Purdy threw a pick. There's Trey Lance. The camera cuts to him and he's ready to go. And I don't know. I totally see them being like, it's best for both sides to move on. But I do think that, like, in a vacuum, like, it totally makes sense to keep him around. I mean, Brock Purdy, you saw what happened last year. They had Christian McCaffrey out there playing quarterback. So, like, if any team should know quarterback depth, it should be Kyle Shanahan, who's seen, you know, RG3 get hurt for him and never quite be the same. And Purdy, like, with his arm, his UCL, like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to speculate. But, you know, he was hurt last year and had a throwing elbow injury that's pretty serious. It's like, could matter for a quarterback. And Darnold has always been bad, except for like a stretch of a couple games last year. So yeah, I think it would have made perfect sense to keep him around if he was like a low profile guy, but I think he's such a high profile guy that
I think it
made
it.
A lot
yeah.
of sense to move him.
I think it's one of these things that it's not really about football and doing what's best. It's about the human side of things and running a roster. I don't like to straw man takes because I know this is not the predominant take, but I did see some, well, you know, Sam Darnold's a safe quarterback. I was like, Samuel Darnold? Are we talking about the same guy here? And I say that as someone who probably
turnovers and 55 games.
Clung to him for too long. Okay. That, yeah, it's kind of a depressing end, frankly, to the story for me personally, because I haven't totally lost faith that, even though I certainly missed on, I thought he would be better. It feels like a guy who's been unlucky his entire career and now this is not a good spot for him. So
if you have a quarterback and you draft him high, play him. Unless you have Aaron Rodgers, unless you have a Tom Brady, mm-hmm. unless you have a Drew Brees, like that is still giving you really good play in the twilight of their career. There's just no reason to throw out a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Gardner Minshew if you're Anthony Richardson and prevent them from getting reps for a guy like that. If you have a legend and you want a quick, like a succession plan that goes smoothly, that's different. But I think that the mistake was letting Lance sit his rookie season. I think he should have been out there right away. And I understand why they sat him, but I think next time that was their big mistake.
I think it was a misalignment of timelines and priorities. And we rarely see good teams draft project quarterbacks. And I think this kind of solved why, because there's so many pressures on a football team to win, to compete, that they clearly were a team. They made it to the Super Bowl. Like, so it's like, we're questioning it, even though on some ways, like what they did was right for the San Francisco 49ers, but it was bad for their draft pick. So they probably shouldn't have made the draft pick in the first place. Hindsight is 2020. Mm-hmm. Both sides are moving on. The Niners are going to be really good. The Cowboys are going to be really good. Feels to me like the biggest loser in all this is sadly Trey Lance.
Yep.
Let's come back and talk about some winners.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. and keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This next section, I am sort of talking, or I guess categorizing, is, are we buying it?
Okay.
Two quarterbacks who have lit up the preseason. I feel like the biggest winners of the 2023 preseason in terms of the discourse. Let's talk first about Kenny Pickett. Three preseason games, 13 for 15, every drive ending in a touchdown. Perfect passer rating. Major caveat supply. Much of this came against backups. It was recently Atlanta. Are we buying it? I think when I say it, I obviously don't mean Kenny Pickett being the best quarterback in the NFL and going to have a perfect passer rating during the season. Are we buying his improvement? Are we buying how good the Steelers offense, the starting offense, has looked this preseason? So you go first. Let me know what you think, and then I will weigh in.
I think I'm buying it. I was intrigued by Kenny Pickett last year. I wasn't the highest on him coming out of Pitt, but last season he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league on deep balls down the field, and he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks of the league throwing when his feet were moving. So he was kind of a big play threat. Like, I thought he had kind of a high ceiling as a playmaker in that way. Kind of an RC Cola Burrow is, I think Nate Tice called him that at one point. I was talking to QB class, Derek Klassen, and he said like Russell Wilson with like normal quarterback, like arm strength and athleticism, which I also don't think was a terrible comp for him, because he had the go balls and he could break structure and make things happen that way. And this year, like, yeah, he's been hitting the top of his drop, getting the ball out up the seams and down the field and connecting. And yeah, I think that he can improve. And I think that he already had some high end accuracy in some different areas. And we're seeing he's a young player and it's a young offense. Everybody is kind of growing together and they look sharp. And Pittsburgh is, I mean, they're well coached every single season. I trust their ability to develop talent. So it doesn't surprise me that Pittsburgh would have a good succession plan after Ben Roethlisberger. So yeah, I'm buying that he's like a capable starter. I'm buying George Pickens. I don't think it's a really stacked division, but they had a winning record last year, and I think that it can happen again, as it almost always does, or always does under Tomlin. Yeah.
So we did a hot takes pod last week, and my hottest take was that I thought the Steelers could have a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, but I didn't assign a record to that, which is so cowardly and like it's such a sneaky way of getting around the fact that I think that division is just an absolute, like I say that and I still think the Bengals are the, you know, it's like it's a hellscape. Mm-hmm. However, the more I've watched of this offense in particular this preseason, the better I have felt about it. And I think with Pickett in particular, there's a few things that have jumped out, and I've talked about this. Last year, I thought he really impressed me. He really surpassed my expectations as a playmaker, attacking downfield. I wasn't sure if he was going to do those things. He also bailed on, like, fled the pocket constantly and was reluctant to attack the middle of the field at times. And I think that you, when you watch him, you can see, oh, this is something that he has spent the entire offseason working on, that those particular areas. And again, that it'll look different against real pass rushes, and he's not going to look as calm and comfortable back there for sure. But when you consider the fact that he appears to have gotten better, and he has thrown some dimes, like I want to, like the Falcons drive again, it's versus the Falcons backups, holy smokes, the throws to the deep balls to both Johnson and Pickens, both great plays by the wide receivers who are amazing, both pearls, perfect balls, like just you could not throw better footballs than he threw. And then speaking of the middle of the field, the seam ball to Freiermuth the week before, again, absolute laser. So when you consider the fact that like you're seeing improvement in the areas where I thought he struggled last year, I really think this offensive line is improving, and they made such a concerted effort to rebuild it. You go out and get Samalu this year. Some of the players last year took steps as well. That matters. And then when you pair that with the fact that, like, I really believe this is one of the better groups of skill players. And I say skill players, so I'm talking wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, both of them. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't they be good? Like, why shouldn't this be a top 10 unit other than Matt Canada? Like, I am buying it. I am buying what I'm seeing, because there's all of the elements you need to make the leap. The quarterback's playing better. He's improved in certain ways. The offensive line is better, and you've got a sick group of skill players. So I am very optimistic about the Steelers offense.
Yeah, and I think that there is a path to the playoffs in this division, even though it's very difficult. I think they can finish ahead of the Browns. I mean, when Deshaun Watson came back, he averaged 13 points a game. Or I shouldn't say he, but the passing offense did. He was holding the ball way too long. He wasn't really, you know, playing with a lot of rhythm. And granted, he hadn't played in a long time, but he hasn't played any games since then. It's not like he's had like a ton of time to, like, you know, get used to this offense in game situations. And they started out with a really tough run of defenses. Like, could the Browns be pretty deep in the hole by the time, like, it's midseason? Like, I think it's possible. I think the Browns have a really high ceiling, but I think that that's also a really possible reality for them. And then the Ravens are stacked, but they're also the most fragile team in the league, probably. Odell, Bateman, yeah. Lamar, Ronnie Stanley, like Marlon Humphrey. These guys all are hurt over and over again, you know? So if the Ravens get banged up and the Browns get off to a slow start, I don't know if the Steelers catch the Bengals, but they're kind of I could see second in the division for them. If the Ravens get banged up, which is totally possible, and if the Browns get off to a slow start, which is totally possible. So I'm repeating myself. But yeah, I think the Steelers are right in the thick of it, but they need a couple things to break their way.
I just like it because also, I don't know, I like it when my opinions about quarterbacks change. I didn't like Kenny Pickett that much in the draft. I'll be real. I thought he was just like a very low ceiling kind of guy, you know. The Steelers took him at a point in the draft, I think it was like 20 or something, or in the 20s, where it was like, okay, it's fine. You know, it wasn't like anything egregious, but he wasn't someone where I was like, I can't wait to see how this looks in the NFL. Comes in last year, does a few things. I'm like, you know what? Okay. All right, Kenny Pickett. You got like a little bit of, you know, kind of scrappy out there, kind of scrapping. And I love, we were talking about priors at the beginning. I like it when a guy like Josh Allen changes my mind as the years go by. So I'm not saying he's going to be Josh Allen, but I think just, you know, he's played well and he's put in a really good position. I mean, contrast the Steelers with the guys we were talking about at the top and the players that they're surrounded by.
Oh, yeah.
Just wildly different supporting casts. So the only thing that dooms it is if Matt Canada clings to the Roethlisberger offense and they just pound the ball on first, second down, Najee Harris. And
that's, it's such totally a predictable offense. The Steelers were a team I watched a lot this offseason, and I was getting to the point where I just like knew what was coming next. I was writing down all the plays. You could probably give me like a late season Steelers game last year and just show me what's going on. And it's like split zone. You're right. Like 90% of the time just saying that, but like they had like Miles Boykin out there, like run every time. Gunnar Olszewski run every time. Like there is just the personnel gave was a dead giveaway every single time. It was not a diverse rushing offense. It was not a diverse passing offense. And that coordinator is still around. So it does scare me. It does scare me because it's like, if I know it's coming, the defenses also know it's coming. And unlike me, they can do something about how to stop it. So that part does still worry me.
All right. The other quarterback I want to talk about in Are We Buying has a coordinator who I do like a lot, or a coach, and that's Matt LaFleur. And the quarterback is Jordan Love, who has had certainly not a perfect preseason, the likes of which Kenny Pickett did statistically. But I thought a very impressive one. All three games, there were some ups and downs, but put out a lot of really good tape, some really beautiful throws. In the last game against Seattle, it started with some issues, missed some throws. But one thing I really liked to seeing out of him in this particular game was the use of his legs, which is not really something he has flashed just intermittently, but you, it was a real reminder in this game. Oh, this dude's an athlete. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am buying this. I'm trying not to be too positive. I guess I'm buying both of them but with some moderation. I want to say that.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with buying the Packers and the Steelers.
It's
pretty good organizations.
Right. The like two successful. Most well-coached teams in the NFL. Yeah, right. Yeah. I've talked about the Packers offensive line. I feel like Love has done enough this preseason in terms of some of these throws, the decision-making, the athleticism. If I'm a Packers fan, I'm feeling pretty good about the quarterback headed into the regular season.
Yeah, and I am a Packer fan at my core, so I have spent a lot of time thinking about Jordan Love and
really?
Figuring if, yeah, I am a Packer fan, but try not to be too crazy about it because I do have to do this nationally. I shouldn't have said that because I'm going to talk about the Lions later and everyone's going to get mad at me now. But
And
I do like Love, and I do think that from the beginning, he has been someone who has looked like he can operate an offense very competently. He came in off a poor senior season at Utah State. Statistically not a very good job on film, like a lot of glaring holes, and fell in the draft to the late first round, which you don't really see a lot of franchise quarterbacks get drafted there. So I feel like as he sat, the idea of Jordan Love has been like, he's this really raw 6'4", like athlete. Like, I feel like that's kind of what people, at least a few months ago, thought of Jordan Love. But watching the tape on him from the Chiefs game to the Eagles game to everything kind of in between there, I've seen a guy who keeps things on the rails. And he, even against the Chiefs, like going into Arrowhead off short notice, no one knew Rodgers was lying about being vaccinated. He comes in, Spags blitzes him more than anyone has been blitzed by Spags before, which is saying a lot. It's the loudest environment in the league. You got to go in there. Like, it would take a superhuman. Like, there are not many human beings on the planet who can go into that situation in their first start and look even half okay. And Love didn't really look that good, but at least I like understood what his mind was thinking. It was, they're blitzing me. Devontae Adams is one-on-one. I'm going to throw it to that guy. And that is a perfectly fine thought process. And he was really trying to punish him. Davante Adams was running a lot of routes deep down the field, and he was trying to get it there, and he just couldn't really hit it. I didn't love the game plan. I thought he could have done a little bit more to mitigate the blitz, or, you know, have Davante running more underneath routes, which wasn't really happening. It was a lot of deep shots. But overall, I was like, okay, he wasn't Zach Wilsoning it, running around in the backfield like a chicken with his head cut off. That's good. And then as I started seeing more and more of him, it really just stood out to me how comfortable he was hitting the top of his drop and just ripping it with anticipation over the middle of the field. Like, he had that in him. The accuracy wasn't always there, but the confidence was always there. And I think the willingness to play like that was always there. And really, my only question with him now is that rushing ability and is the deep ball consistency. He had a pass wide open to Christian Watson that was a little bit underthrown. In the last Seahawks game, there was a pass down the field to Watson against the Bengals that he left maybe a little bit inside, and Dax Hill was able to break it up. I haven't really, like, Dax I've Hill, seen the anticipate. Yep. I've seen the anticipation. I've seen the ability to get the ball out really quickly and operate the offense at a high level. I've seen that from him. But the garnish, the flourish, like the spin around, like do some Rodgers stuff, you know, like I'm not totally sure if that is there. And I feel like it's kind of hard to even comprehend that, because for the Packers, the narrative seems to be, will they go 3-for-3, Favre, Rodgers, Love, or it's impossible that they go 3-for-3. They can't go Favre, Rodgers, Love. But it's like, what if Love is like Big Brock Purdy, you know, and it's like, can just keep things on the rail and maybe right. doesn't like, it's like, what, he could just be a game manager. And that's like the thing that no one can comprehend about the Packers. It's either they hit on a Hall of Famer or they finally draft a bust after all these years. And it's like, the answer is definitely somewhere in the middle.
Here's my thing about Love. If he's just in that 10 to 15 range, I think that's good enough, because I think Matt LaFleur is a very good play caller. I think this is going to be a very schemed up offense, the likes of which he could not call with Aaron Rodgers. And I like these young skill players. The flip side of Jordan Love underthrowing Christian Watson is Christian Watson was wide open. He's so good. He barbecued Michael Jackson on that go ball versus Seattle. He had like 5 yards on him. And Jordan Love, if you're listening, overthrow Christian Watson. It probably will work out. Don't try to put any touch on it. Get that ball out. Overthrow him. Don't give Dax Hill time to come across the field and make an amazing play, because that dude can separate. I think he is like a legit star, to be honest. I like Romeo Doubs too. They're giving Musgrave, the tight end that they took this year, a ton of play. He's gotten a lot of targets, and they seem to be hell-bent on using him a lot. We know how good this offensive line is. We know how good the run game is. So I just feel like with Jordan Love, the question isn't, is he the next Aaron Rodgers? It's like, can he keep the trains running, you know? And to your point, like I think he can. And I think that when I watched him this offseason, I wasn't like, ooh, special play, ooh, like dazzling, you know? I mean, even the two throws Kenny Pickett made that I alluded to were probably better than most.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I think this offense, I think they've drafted so well, and I think the play caller is so good that to go back to the original premise of the question, am I buying it? I'm buying the Packers offense. I think they'll be good. And Jordan Love showed me enough this preseason for me to believe that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it. What it comes down to with the Packers is all mental stuff. Rodgers went on, I don't know what show he was on, talking about how many mental mistakes they made per game last year. It does need to go down. It's a really, really young offense, and everybody needs to play like vets. I think if there's a problem, it'll be frustrating things like drops. Christian Watson's not above a drop. Jaden Reed is not above a drop. Musgrave is not above a drop. Like, even Doubs had some drop problems last year. So like, catch what's thrown to you. And then pre-snap penalties. There were a lot of them this preseason. There was only one negative play that I think was on the offensive line all preseason for the Packers. There was one negative 1 yard Emmanuel Wilson run when Jordan Love was out there and the starting offensive line was out there. And Bakhtiari was even missing. But it was just that one negative 1 yard run. There were some other negative plays, a pass to Christian Watson that went for negative 1 yards. But on those passes outside, like, it's not really on the offensive line. And there was the pass that got batted and Love caught it himself, which also I'm not really putting on the offensive line. He didn't really get sacked. He didn't get hit. And every run was not a TFL except for one. So the offensive line is very good. But they also had, I think, 5 pre-snap penalties, a botched snap. Josh Myers has had several botched snaps this training camp. So again, it's like, this team can limit the negative plays. I think they can, you know, Jordan Love can take care of the football. He can keep things on the rails. The receivers are super electric, but drops, pre-snap penalties. I think one thing that's fair to criticize of Matt LaFleur over the course of his tenure in Green Bay, sometimes they haven't always risen to the occasion in big moments. I think in playoff games, they've been favored and come up a little bit short. After bye weeks, they have been blown out a couple times. Week ones, they've been blown out a couple times. It's not all the time, but I do think, like, watching this Packers team over the past couple years, it doesn't always seem like they live up to the talent that they've got, or sometimes they can kind of collapse in on themselves. And that's the one thing they need to
certainly
avoid. They can't be sloppy. They cannot be sloppy. And the defense as well. The defense is also, like, looked so good on paper last year and got gashed. So on paper, the team could be really, really good. But everyone needs to lock in, and they're really young.
One thing I don't think we'll see it this year. It feels like more of a year two thing with Love. But there is a possibility that this offense, and this year I really think it's going to be about just kind of like, you know, comfort, getting him, you know, making efficiency and all that, kind of lives out the promise of what Trey Lance was supposed to be in San Francisco, which we never got to see, which is like, okay, you know, Kyle Shanahan wanting to draft an actual dual threat quarterback. And let's see, okay, what if, you know, you're already like, make lives difficult for defenses in all the ways we talk about all the time. What if you change the math? And we might see that a little bit with Jordan Love in Green Bay, because, you know, Matt LaFleur does come from that tree. Obviously not something you did with Rodgers. There's some pretty interesting upside here schematically. So I'm excited to see it. I'm optimistic. So that's, yeah, we'll see.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're going to wrap with, I asked you to name 2 teams you felt you were higher on and 2 teams you felt you were lower on than the consensus. Let's go higher, lower, higher, lower. And let's start with the New England Patriots team you sent me. So I guess, give me your elevator pitch for why you are higher on the New England Patriots, and I will either challenge it or disagree or agree.
Okay, my elevator pitch is that Bill Belichick lost his mind last year when he named Matt Patricia the offensive coordinator. That was really dumb, and I don't know what washed over him when he made that phone call and asked if he wanted to do the job, but that's over. He's fired. Someone that played with Mac Jones at Bama is there now, and we should see something closer to 2021 levels of offense from the Patriots. And in terms of the defense, I don't think that you can really make a dent in it. It's JC Jackson, who's a superstar corner. He left last year. It was rookies. It was just people named Jones out there that no one had ever heard of before, and they balled out. Everyone was fantastic. And the front 7 is one of the most pleasant watches in the entire league, the way they take air out of every wet rep. Juwan Bentley and Tavai, the way they take on blocks and just close up any potential gaps. Dietrich Wise is a beast. I think that Godchow even, and then the pass rushing duo of Uche and Judon, like, it's just no real super duper stars on that defense. But last year they were a top 5 unit, even after getting rid of their only all pro. And I think that Bill Belichick just creates defensive players in like the orc pit from Lord of the Rings. They just all come crawling out of there one after the other, like in an unstoppable, like they can just send the second strings out there and have them kill CJ Stroud. It doesn't matter. Like it's, the defense should be really good. The defense should be really, really good. And I think the offense will be closer to 2021 levels. And I think, and this is probably where the most contentious part comes in, because I think everybody agrees with that. I think the AFC East, there are teams that have higher ceilings from them, but I think all of them are at kind of a risk of being disappointing. And if they are, I think the Patriots are going to be right there.
I think that the case for the New England Patriots is that they just win every game 16-13 and just make life miserable for every, and it's a totally realistic case. I am very scared off by the fact that FTN has them as having the hardest schedule in the NFL.
Yeah.
They're high on the AFC. Sounds like they're higher on the AFC East than you. I think the AFC East though, you do have more like high ceiling, high variance type teams outside of New England. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to get me talking about the Patriots defense, but the offense, I definitely buy the can't be worse kind of argument. And, you know, even in the preseason, you've seen a little, you're like, oh yeah, okay, it's Bill O'Brien. It's going to be a lot of RPOs. They're going to have them in empty. They're going to do all the things we wanted them to do. I am worried about the supporting cast and not just the receivers. I'm worried about this offensive line. I don't know who's playing right tackle. I'm just going to throw that out there. It's unclear to me at the moment. That is a concern.
Yes.
And then I think other guys are hurt. Cole Strange has been hurt. I don't know. It's Nwenu's back, which is important. He had off-season surgery. Yeah, he returned to practice. So that's good. But, you know, it can't look worse than it did last year. So I don't disagree. I think, but you hit on kind of what is really going to be the determinant, which is almost less about New England and more about whether teams like the Jets and the Dolphins hit the ceiling or the floor of their projections. I think is probably going to influence that in a big way. All right. Well, that's probably a good transition to a team that you were lower on. And this is one where I think we disagree. So this will be good. The Miami Dolphins, your chum in the water right now, because that fan base, they love clipping stuff. So
yeah.
So get yourself ready. Aggregate, set this up for aggregation. Let's go. Why are you lower on the Dolphins?
I think the Dolphins are going to be the most disappointing team in 2023. I think all the warning signs to me are flashing. Ooh. They're going off like, that team has such high hopes. Like, it's a Super Bowl contender, right? Everyone seems to like them. I've seen people say if Tua is healthy, they'll be the number one seed in the entire conference. I think that that's a pretty big if. I mean, this is a pretty ugly thing to talk about, and it's scary, but concussions, when you get them, you're more likely to get them again, and they seem to increase in severity based on the research that I've read. And I think Tua had a miserable time last year because he suffered some pretty brutal injuries. He considered retiring this offseason. I worry about how that affects the team. I do. I think that if you're an offensive lineman in Miami, you're under a ton of pressure. I think if you're Mike McDaniel in Miami, you're under a ton of pressure to keep Tua healthy. And I think that's a whole little side mission that they've got to really worry about. Is it's not just, you can't call plays where he might hang in there and take a big hit, really. Or maybe you can, but it's really risky. And I think that his medical history could impact the way Mike McDaniels calls plays. And this is, again, the human aspect of things. If you've got a quarterback in there and he hits his head again, I mean, imagine how you'd feel like as that in the air in the stadium would be gone. All right. It would be an abject disaster for absolutely everybody involved. That is hanging over this team's head the entire year. And Tua is primed to regress anyway. Getting rid of all the injury stuff. Let's say he's perfectly healthy the entire year. He is not repeating what he did last season. You look at his Pro Football Reference page. There's a lot of black and bold on there, leading the league in touchdown percentage and like yards per attempt and all of these things. Like, that's all really good. But I think those are kind of a once in a career type of things for Tua Tagovailoa. And when he was hurt last season, he missed games against the Jets twice, the Patriots, the Bengals, a game he got hurt against. And there was one other team that I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was like 4 or 5 top 10 defenses. And then he came back, he got the Texans, he got the Bears, he got the Lions. Like, I think that if he plays a full slate, the numbers are going to go down. Also, the last month of the season, teams were pressing their wide receivers more, disrupting the timing, getting a lot of depth with their linebackers, closing the windows that he wanted to throw into. Tua was not playing well the last month of the season. His completion percentage was below 60% in his last 4 games. I think his touchdown to interception ratio was something like 5-3. And a lot of Dolphins fans will justify that and say, well, he had a concussion. His brain was, you know, like not... That's something that's always the excuse I hear for this stretch of games was like it was
Packers. You're talking about the Packers game.
The Packers game. And it could be true, but yeah. It doesn't necessarily make me feel better about his situation. Like, cause that's pretty scary. And Jalen Ramsey is already hurt. The defense, like the front four, is super stacked. Fangio is there, but the secondary to me looks pretty weak. They brought in Ramsey for a reason. Xavien Howard looked like he lost a big step last year and was pretty much burnt toast. They've already having injury issues. I think that Tua isn't going to repeat his performance from last year, and I think that his injury history is extremely scary to me.
Well, I can't dispute any of the injury stuff, and I think the question of whether that's going to affect play calling is really something that we're going to have to just see what that looks like. You know,
yes, it's total speculation and it's reckless.
I'd be nervous, man.
I would be nervous too. It's the human aspect of it.
Yeah. I think a lot of my Dolphins optimism, and let me be clear, this is of course predicated on Tua Tagovailoa being healthy for the majority of the season and Teron Armstead playing, which is, you know, as equal of an if, is that I think that while I've talked about this a lot, the offense really ran into some issues in the second half of the season. We talked about the pressing. They play the Chargers week one, which will be really interesting. I think that there's so much talent on that offense that there's a lot of buttons they can press and that they did press. I think you saw at times, like against the Bills, for example, when he did play at the end of the season, that make me think that even if I don't think this offense is going to be like the buzzsaw of death that it was, but I think that even if they're like 70 to 80% of that, that's still a top 10 offense. And while the Ramsey injury does suck, this is a defense that was playing better at the end of last year, that is going to be much better coached, that brought in very good linebacker who I think is going to help. I love this front. I absolutely love them, adore them. They're one of my favorite fronts in football.
The front is
so
sick.
I think it's kind
the
of
front is sick.
It's one of those things, Theo, where it's like, even if the offense comes down a little bit and the defense comes up, I'm like, but you bring up many reasonable points. And I think the most important of which is there's Super Bowl aspirations for this team. So when we talk about, like, you know, relative to expectations, we're not talking about them winning more than 9 games. I think we probably both agree that's pretty realistically on the table. We're talking about, is this actually a Super Bowl contender? And a lot of questions.
They have a high ceiling, but I also think their floor is very, very low. I think like if there's a team that just completely implodes this year, I think it's Miami. But that's a very spicy take. So, and yeah, Hill and Waddle. Do you know what I predicted them to go on TikTok, the Miami Dolphins? Are you familiar with this?
No. Did you do a record prediction or?
I did. I went on record and I said they'd win 6 games.
This year?
Yes, this year.
Oh,
6
God.
Games.
I can't condemn
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's...
That's
no,
not
no.
Good.
I don't expect anyone else to be as low on them as me, but I...
Six games.
I worry about them.
I think... Let me
throw
really out
tough
a
schedule.
Take. Yeah, they have... Everyone in the AFC East does. I think even with Mike White or Skylar Thompson, they win more than 6 games, honestly. So
you think so?
So, yeah.
I'm crazy.
We'll have to touch base at the end of the season. Okay, you're high on the Giants.
Yes.
No
the
more
Giants.
Dolphins slander. It's enough.
No more
You've
Dolphins.
Already alienated enough
I'm
people.
Sorry.
Let's talk about the Giants, because I think the Giants are really interesting. This is another offense where the starting unit did really look good in that one drive where we saw them during the preseason. Made a lot of changes, a lot of additions on both sides of the ball. I guess, well, you know, this is an interesting pick. It's also a spicy pick because a lot of people have them pegged as a regression candidate for all of the team reasons that teams usually regress, winning a lot of close games, most notably. So why do you think that's not going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen because I think there's a lot of meat on the bone for them to improve. I think last year their roster was not very good, like on paper. A team I was very wrong on last year was the Giants. I looked at him. I'm like, offensive line looks bad. Receivers look bad. Corners look bad. And Wink Martindale is going to blitz a lot. Like they're going to get torched. And I don't think they're going to be able to win many games. But they wildly surpassed my expectations, won a playoff game. And I think there's something to that. And I think going from Joe Judge to Mike Kafka and Brian Daboll, like I get that there's some plexiglass theory stuff where if you get that much better, you're probably going to regress a little bit. But I think it can also be that your coaches are just that much better than they were last year. And I think that this quality of play that they played with last year is what they should expect going forward with that unit. And they're adding a guy like Darren Waller. And they didn't get anything in terms of deep shots last year. It was the most conservative offense in the NFL, lowest average depth of target, least percentage of throws over 20 yards. Like there was absolutely nothing down the field this year. So I think they can kind of repeat the, you know, one step, get the ball out quick, play action, run it with Saquon, run it with Jones if that first read isn't there. Like I think all that can happen. And I think they can take care of the football and keep things on the rails like they did last year. But I think there's a lot of room to grow in terms of explosive plays. And I think the addition of Hyatt and I think the addition of Waller will help that a lot. So I know that there's maybe some things they'll regress on, like maybe they won't be quite so lucky with the turnovers. Maybe there'll be a few more. Who knows? But I think overall, it's a very competent team. And I think last year, they were just throwing stuff at the wall. The first half of the season, they were like 24th in pass rate. From weeks 1 through 9, from weeks 10 on, they were 5th or 6th. So that's like a totally different offensive philosophy that they just went to mid-season, and they were good in both areas. And now they've got some time to figure out, I think, what they want to be, what they want to do. They've added some talent, and yeah, they're a regression candidate, but last year, I think they were ahead of schedule, and I think they're more talented this year. I like their front seven a lot. I like Kayvon Thibodeau. Dexter Lawrence is a sleeper defensive player of the year candidate to me. Aziz Ojulari quietly has a lot of sacks in his career.
They're not going to give it to a nose tackle.
He was in and out of the lineup last year.
Stop it.
They're not going to give it to a nose tackle. But Dexter Lawrence is so much better than all the other nose tackles.
Sorry, I got to stop you. Front seven. You can't say front seven. I'm sorry. Who other than Okereke is a starting linebacker on this
team? Okay.
I was nodding a lot for the podcast audience. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I like these, you know, the offense is going to be more explosive. I like Darren Waller. It looks really good. But when you said the front seven, I was like, okay, I got to step in here. You had Dexter Lawrence winning defensive player of the year in the front
sleeper,
seven.
Sleeper pick. They have an elite, elite guy in the front four.
Yeah, it's a terrible sleeper pick.
They were in...
Blight your money, umpire.
All right, you're right. He's not going to win. He's a sleeper sports writer. He's a sleeper sports writer pick for Defensive Player of the Year in that there might be a group of people on Twitter who could push the...
Okay, so I do like this front a lot. And I think that Thibodeau, if he ascends, they have the potential to be even better. They added some bulk. You know, this is a team that was a nightmare against the run last year. So even adding like Okereke, I don't think is like a top NFL linebacker, but the gap, the leap you take from what they were working with last year to him in sheer competence is pretty massive. That said, I don't know, you know, around him is a little bit iffy. You bring in A'shaun Robinson, you know, you're really trying to shore up that run defense. Deontay Banks, who they drafted in the first round, also looks really good in the preseason, by the way. So
yes, he does.
Which was a pick that I liked and everybody liked because it just made a lot of sense for a Wink Martindale defense. I think with the Giants, where I struggle with a little bit is I think they could be better and yet not finish with a better record because of, one, I think the NFC East is difficult. Some of the regression stuff. I think that's kind of why I struggle with them, Theo, because I don't like, I'm like, oh, this is a better football team than last year. No question. but things might not go their way. You know, we just, this is just something we see. There's a reason why the one score game stuff matters, and it does tend to be pretty predictive. I do think Daniel Jones is probably going to turn the ball over more than he did last year, especially if he tries to push it down the field a bit. I say that as someone who really likes a lot of what they did and really, really likes this coaching staff. So I don't like slandering them, and that is not my intention, but there's definitely like there's reasons to like what they've done, while I think also being skeptical of the immediate short-term results in terms of competitiveness.
It's always tough. This is my problem with the Patriots and the Giants, because I'm like, oh yeah, this team is scrappy. They're good. They're sneaky good. No one's giving them any credit. And then it's like
similar
the division. And then it's like, oh,
no, I think you're
dang it.
Yes, no, I think you're that's I could have said the same thing about the Patriots. Totally, where like I think they'll be better than they were last year. Will it matter? That's tough. Okay, let's wrap. You slandered the Dolphins so hard that I'm glad that I'm on the record pushing back now, because Dolphins fans, I'm your defender. I don't think you're going to slander the Lions as much, but no. You did say you're a little bit lower on them. I did go last week with the Takes Pod. We went to the Bill Barnwell show, and Bill also had he was also a little bit skeptical about Detroit. So you're not alone in this.
Okay.
I guess
I feel
what's
alone.
The biggest reason? Everybody loves the scrappy Detroit Lions, except for you.
Everyone does love them. And I love them too. Like Dan Campbell is awesome. Like that team is cool. But people are projecting a big jump from the Lions. And like last year or 2 years ago, they were really bad. Last year they were decent. This year, in the natural progression of things, they should take the leap to Super Bowl contender. And I look at them, I'm like, where are people seeing the jump? How much meat is there left on the bone for them to get better? And their offense was operating at such a high level last year. You know, they were top, 10 in the league, definitely. I think they were 6th in EPA per play overall. Especially over the last half of the year, they were really cooking. But when it comes to Jared Goff and the offense, that's kind of a team that I think could regress a little bit, because it's like, if you look at the PFF QB annual, which I always think has a lot of good information every year, they were pretty low on Jared Goff, which is shocking to me considering PFF's history of ranking like system quarterbacks. Usually they have them like graded number one, but they looked at a lot of his stable metrics and he was average to below average in a lot of them. On non-play action reps, he was in the 27th percentile for their grades. On the play action reps, he was in the 97th percentile. And we've seen offenses like this over the course of history, and we've seen them over with Jared Goff, really, like with a genius play caller, he can look really good. But is it sustainable year after year? And what new answers do they have? Their deep threat, Jameson Williams, is doing all the things that busts do, which is get suspended, get hurt, and not catch any passes. So it's like, I liked him, but like, is that gonna be
I just made a horrified face for the listening audience.
Like I just don't know if you can bank on much of an element to their offense that isn't just the underneath stuff, because they've got Gibbs, they've got Laporta, they've got Amon-Ra, and last year they got blitzed a bunch because Goff is bad when you move him off his spot and it's kind of hard to get pressure on the line. So people blitzed him and he would just get the ball out quickly. And I think they could still do that, but I think he'll get blitzed less. And I think that this offense that was so good last year, I'm just not sure. I guess the running back room is better.
No, I hear you.
But like that doesn't really move the needle for me in terms of like what they did last year. Like right now, I would say they're not a top 10 offense to me, the Lions. And maybe that changes because they don't get hurt and other teams do. But if I were to tell you, you know, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Kansas City, Seattle, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Buffalo, Jacksonville, Dallas, Chargers. Those are 10 offenses I like more than Detroit.
Mm.
And in even the Packers, they've got a system quarterback. I did say Baltimore. I didn't say Miami. Okay. You could throw them in there. There's probably a couple teams that you could throw in there that I didn't even say that like maybe look better and I'm a little bit higher on in terms of offense. And the defense, they run like man coverage, they blitz. It's a we're better than you type of scheme. And they're not quite better than people on defense, I think.
They're not better than people, but they're going to be better than they were last year. I think I'm actually going to make the exact same case I made for Miami, which is even if the offense takes a little step back, and I think that's plausible. It's totally plausible. I'm trying to remember if I had, I think I might've had them outside my top 10. Yeah, we do a top 10 offenses pod. And I think I might've had them just mm-hmm. outside looking in, which was, you know, kind of, can't remember, either that or at 9 or 10, but anyways,
yeah.
Even if they take a little step back, this defense was so bad last year. So you ask, where did they make the leap? And
in overall EPA per play.
So I think the investments in the pass defense in particular, that's where they make the leap potentially. Now, I have concerns about the run defense still being an issue that lost them football games last year. They're starting a rookie linebacker. I think Jack Campbell's going to start. Still some questions about that. But the mix of Sutton, Mosley, Brian Branch, who's balled out this preseason, CJGJ, Joseph and Walker, it's good, it's deep, it's better. So I think it's very similar to the Miami thing where I'm like, I see, you know, when people are like, the Detroit Lions are going to Super Bowl, I'm like, whoa, like, you know. But I do think some very of the targeted improvements they've made on that side of the ball could pay off. I'll say that. So
I would say I agree. I just think if the offense gets a little worse and the defense gets a little better, that means they're about the same. And they were 9-8 last year and they didn't win their division. If I were to tell you Lions or Packers, what would you say? I think most people would say Lions with very confidently. And I look at the Packers and I look at what Jordan Love is doing and I'm like, he can be a game manager like Goff. And I look at the weapons, I'm like, they maybe don't have anybody as good as Amon-Ra, but they as a whole, top to bottom, I think I'd take the Packers skill position players over Detroit's. The line in both places is very good. And the Packers have Jair, Rashawn Gary, and Kenny Clark. Three players better than anybody on Detroit's defense. So could I tell you, like, would it shock you to say like the Packers and the Lions are like very close to just as good as each other on paper? I think it's not surprising. I don't think that's a hot take. And then the Giants. The Giants and the Lions, I also think, are in kind of a similar place. But the Lions are getting treated a tier above those teams, and I don't think that they are.
I don't think you're wrong about the Packers, but God knows I've been burned by that good on paper defense for like 3 straight years now, and they still have the same defensive coordinator. Theo.
That is. So, you're not wrong. Yeah. You're not wrong.
We'll see. Okay. I like this. I like it. I feel like I agree too much with my guests, so I'm glad to actually have a little bit of, we're going to have to touch base at the end of the year, especially about that Dolphins.
We will. Oh my God. Hopefully it's not. Carried to Miami on a stake if the Dolphins are really good. So we will not be touching base.
Awesome. Summer. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. This is really fun. Guys, check out Theo on Twitter, Theo Ash NFL on TikTok. It's also Theo Ash NFL, I think, right? Same handle.
Yep.
Your TikTok handle is the same. Okay. And the Stay Hot Pod. But in the meantime, we'll be back later this week having Ben Solak on, Seth Walder. And again, thank you to everybody who filled out the survey. Really awesome to read. Really appreciate it. Theo is nodding because he got some popularity votes as well.